Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches.
Welcome to Baroque Bitches.
Biatch.
Your art, history, gossip, podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Raquel.
And we're going to get into some juicy lowbrow tea.
Ooh.
Fancy, fancy art world.
Oh my God. Pinky up. Don't breathe on the art.
Pinky up.
Don't look at the art.
Don't even
not
look at it.
Not good enough for
You're
it.
You're too poor to look at this art.
Oh my God. Disgusting.
Ew, waiter.
Oh, God. Yeah. If I had a nickel for every time I felt less than in an art setting.
Yeah. Right? And that's why we're here. Because if you're just like, totally. Damn, I guess I don't get it. That's why we're here. We don't get it sometimes either.
Yeah.
But at least we know like a little bit of the context of why this shit is cool. Or like why this shit is relevant. It might not even be cool.
Yeah. I think and also just like being able to talk about it in a way that's not worrying about judgment.
Exactly.
No judgment here. Like I mean, if you come in and if you come in and you're talking about
juxtaposition.
Like, have you seen Conan O'Brien, like, the episodes where he brings in his producer, Jordan? And this guy, he's always, like, the epitome of pretension. He's like, oh, you know, the wine. And he's like, and he they
the
went
tannins.
To the tannins.
The mouthfeel.
And he was like, when you take tango, like, tango. Like tango lessons, when you take tango. And Conan's like, it's not fucking tango, it's tango, you asshole. And he's like, it's pronounced tongo.
Like, it's like the people, it's like that guy. That say, edamame.
Edamame.
And it's like, it's actually edamame, but okay.
Is it edamame? I think edamame. I say edamame.
Edamame.
Edamame. Okay. Sorry. I don't know how many people we've offended in the last 2 minutes.
I love edamame, by the way.
We had a cute, so we asked people for their angry quitting stories, and we had a cute little one. Come in from Colleen.
Ooh.
Hi, Colleen. We love you. Thanks for sending this in. So I'm going to go ahead. Should I read it?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Spill she says, the tea.
I got a job with one of those college kids will paint your house situations. The first day on the job, there was a whole crew of dudes with me, but only enough painting supplies for like 3 of us. So half the guys just sat there doing nothing all day.
On fire. Set them on fire.
And did not volunteer to help. The lead guy for our crew seemed very nice, but told a lot of stories about his friends and exclusively referred to his female friends as his bitches and whores.
Oh.
God, I love that.
Yeah. Read the room.
Like,
dude.
What? I have a vagina. Why are you talking to me like this?
Oh my God.
We just met.
On fire.
Why are you
on
doing
fire.
That? Most importantly, it was 107 degrees that day, and I was not physically or mentally equipped for that. I don't think anybody would be, even if you live in like Las Vegas. But
that's
hi,
not
Enzo.
Yeah.
Hi to our new fan, Enzo. We love you.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining Patreon. I spent the first half of the day panicking about how I was going to get out of this decision. Then came up with the genius plan to go stand by my car and pretend to have an animated phone call. I love picturing this. Like the animated phone call. then come back and tell the guys that my best friend was pregnant and just went into labor and needed me at the hospital and I'm very kindly excused.
I am so using that too. What are they going to do? What are you going to do?
Just like on the phone.
What are you going to do?
And then what happened? Like, I'm just like, what does that look?
Oh my God, I'm coming right now.
That night I emailed the big boss and told him this job was not for me, good for you, but could I still be paid for my half day of work? And also that FYI, his site lead was saying very offensive things about women all the time. I never heard from any of them again, did not get paid, and lost 69 giggity that dollars that I was instructed to spend on steel toe boots that I couldn't return because I got paint on them. I wish I had actually rage quit instead of made up a stupid story when I had many legitimate reasons of why that was a bad situation quit. But it was 2006. I was 20 years old. Lesson learned. If people are shitty, do a rage quitty. Ah, that's so cute, Colleen. If people are shitty, do a rage quitty. I love it.
Wow. Well, I feel like, too, 2006 is a weird time for any woman to speak up about things. And totally. This was also a time that, like, calling a woman a bitch and a hoe was totally, totally accepted.
And everything was like, that's gay. Was that still the, that's gay? 100%, I'm using quotes.
100%. Like, and I feel like even the R word was accepted. There was a song, I think, that came out in 2006 that had the R word by the Black Eyed Peas. Remember, let's get it started. It's not get it started. It rhymes with that. Remember that? Okay. Debacle?
Yeah, I don't remember that.
You are really going to produce a song? Like,
whose idea was this? Fire him. Fire him. Get out of here.
Seriously, the early 2000s, I feel like we took a big step back.
Yeah.
And like, this whole situation. I'm hoping things are a little different now. Our sensibilities are a little bit different, but I totally remember being in that kind of situation, like, especially when I was back when I was bartending and getting kinds of comments like that where you just feel like, shit, I am the only chick here. If I say something, am I gonna be that girl? And I'm trying to be cool and like friends with you fucking assholes right now. And it's like, man, there's so many times where I look back and I'm like, why didn't I fucking set them on fire? Am I serious with myself?
I know.
Of like, there's so many conversations that are like in my brain that come
up. Especially when you're like in your 20s at a throwaway job. Like, that's the time to rage quit for sure. I wish I would have done that more.
Or just been like, what the fuck did you just say?
Yeah.
And then
or something
their little
like
penises
that.
Would have shriveled up into their bodies.
Right. And that job, it's not that important. You can like replace it, it's a replaceable job for sure.
Yeah. And I feel like even in those like important jobs, I think that's really when women start feeling weird about, oh, he's rubbing my shoulders, but I really want this job.
Yeah. I did have somebody in like the big boss, quote unquote, at my one of my early like professional jobs tell me he liked my sweater. Mm. I like your sweater. Like, ew. Like, no.
In like a don't gross way?
It was definitely like, you're looking at my tits, dude. Like, don't. Like, ugh. Like, why? You know? Like, it was a tight sweater, okay? I wasn't asking for it. I just looked hella cute, all right? Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, if you think it's going to be creepy, it's going to be creepy.
Well, so and if you're in a position to have, like, power over somebody else in some way, like, don't. Just don't.
We don't need compliments, actually.
Hold
back.
No compliments. We're good.
We're good on that. We compliment each other all the fucking time. So we know when we look cute. We got it.
We got it. Oh, I'm like sweating so much in here. It's like a million degrees. Okay, sorry. Focus. All right.
Well, you look glowing.
Thank you. It's sweat.
It's my new highlighter called Sweat.
I'm so excited for this one. So,
dude, yeah, this one's intense. So, if you want to get into it, it's going to be really intense, you guys. So, buckle the fuck up.
I'm glad I'm drinking today. All right. Let's go.
Okay. Are you ready to visualize?
Yes.
All right, let's go. Rags to riches. Underground to mainstream, street urchin to art superstar. That's what they're saying about me. I wear the crown. These idiots have no idea what I'm really doing with this art game. It is a game after all. I wear the crown. They think so highly of me when I'm in front of my paintings, but will hold their purse a little tighter when I'm walking towards them on the street. I just want to sing. They don't know I'm a philosopher, a poet, a renegade. Andy is dead. Andy is dead. The Titanic wasn't supposed to sink. They don't know the revolution has started. We are the real avant-garde. They don't even speak French. I just want to sing. Sure, I'll paint your bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken as long as you hang it in your penthouse on 57th Street for all your waspy friends to see. I wear the crown. Andy was right. That patronizing asshole was right. This is a white man's game, but I'm here to play. The Titanic wasn't supposed to sink. Abstract expressionist? Hell no. Every little thing means something. It has to. I have to. I wear the crown. They ask such stupid fucking questions. I wrote it all down. It's right there. I wrote it for you. The Titanic wasn't supposed to sink. They think the words are meaningless because they don't even fucking read. They don't even speak French. Just like hip-hop, meaningless to them because the artists are black. They can't help but like it, though. Andy is dead. Andy is dead. They took jazz from us, but they won't take this. Because we know how to play the game now, and we're winning. I wear the crown. I just want to sing. They don't even speak French. I don't feel bad for being an asshole. I deserve it. Sure, pay the 10 grand for the painting. It'll make you feel better. I wear the crown. If I lean into the arrogance of Pablo, maybe I too can shine like he did. I wear the crown. The Titanic wasn't supposed to sink. Andy is dead. Andy is dead. I'm onto something here. I'm finishing what Burroughs started. A generation of explorers, but this time I will include the people that look like me. The real explorers, the ones that are forced to explore. They don't even speak French. I just want to sing. I just want to stay clean. Andy is dead. The Titanic wasn't supposed to sink. Andy is dead. Andy is dead. Which brings us to our gossip topic, Jean-Michel Basquiat. The Titanic wasn't supposed to sink.
Damn.
Oh, yeah, dude. Buckle the fuck up, people.
That was so good. Ooh, I got chills.
Yes. So this guy, I mean, this dude is so inspirational to millions of artists, musicians, writers, just like he was heavily inspired by other artists, musicians, and writers. He made such a huge impact in such a short amount of time.
Foreshadowing.
And this is the 80s. So I don't know about you. I got my 80s hair on.
Get into the group. I don't know if that's 90s, but I think it's 80s. Maybe. I don't know.
All I could do is I did one of the memes on Instagram. It wasn't really a meme. It was just like one of his pieces of work.
A meme.
And that freaking song, White Line, blow up. So good. That has been stuck in my head for a solid week and a half since I've been doing that.
Fucking love it.
Oh, yeah. That has been stuck in my head. But I feel like the 80s sometimes get a bad rap, maybe because the fashion was so questionable.
And there was just like a lot of hate crimes and shit happening, right? Yes. Bully and...
There was a lot of stuff going on, but the 80s was an insanely progressive time in America. Not only was the economy booming, technology progressing, and traditional sensibilities changing. So there's this dramatic shift in society for people of color, for women, and for overall marginalized people. The American dream is no longer a nuclear family behind a white picket fence because that facade is fading. Because the kids of the traditional 50s parents see that the so-called dream can often be a very sad reality if you weren't a cis white man that fit into the mold. And of course, like you were talking about with all the hate, with any dramatic shifts in society comes a fuck ton of pushback.
Right.
And to fight the pushback, we need renegades like Basquiat to fight on the front lines. But that's a lot of pressure to put on one 20-year-old kid. Like, let's call it as it is. He was a kid. He was fucking young.
Yeah.
And we'll see what that pressure does to one of art's greatest heroes. So I'm going to, like, try to make this not all fucking sad.
Oh, no.
It's really inspiring, though, and there's some fun moments. So we'll try. But you got to know about this guy because he's so fucking cool, you
the
guys.
The guy, right?
He's the guy. He's like the 80s guy. And I think Basquiat's paintings are very recognizable. Like, if you just looked it up, you would be like, oh, that guy.
Style,
What do you know about Basquiat, Raquel?
I know what his work looks like.
Yeah.
And doesn't he do like one painting that's like Romulus and Remus sort of remix situation?
Yeah. Yeah. He does a ton of like historical references, philosophical references.
Yeah.
Lots of ancient history, royalty. Like he just knows everything. I feel like this guy knows so much.
And I'm so excited to learn more about him because the only thing that I really know is that he's related to Andy Warhol in some way and that his paintings are dope and that he was impactful in the 80s and that he died young. So spoiler alert.
Oh god.
And like drugs maybe were involved, but that's really it. I don't know that much.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into some context then. Who is this boy? So
who are you?
Who is this man?
Age, sex, location.
So Jean-Michel Basquiat was born December 22nd, 1960 in Brooklyn, New York. Which makes him a Capricorn.
I was going to say cuspy. He's a cuspy kid.
I know. He was so close to being a Sagittarius. Like,
One day.
Get out of here. But, and yeah, we're not going to skip the zodiac sign. So bear with me if you're not into it. But I think it does make a lot of sense here. So,
sure.
Capricorns being the last earth sign of the zodiac. It's also symbolized as the devil card in tarot as well. They are significantly ambitious. Absolutely fearless, resilient, and determined to succeed. They can also seem restrained and conservative. However, they do hide that party god personality underneath all that ambition. So, yes, it oozes Bacchus energy.
And I used to date a Capricorn. That plays.
Okay. I think I know who I'm talking about.
It sucked.
I think I know who you're talking about. And, of course, this description is perfect for Basquiat.
Aww.
Sorry, Capricorns out there. Y'all are fucking intense.
Well, no, yeah, nothing against Capricorns.
Nothing against
Lord.
Whoa. Yes. Mommy.
Who's mom?
Mom is Matilde Basquiat, born Matilde Andrades, and she was Puerto Rican American. So she was born in New York, But her, family is from Puerto Rico.
Got it.
And the Basquiat family actually lived in a mostly middle-class neighborhood in Brooklyn called Borum Hill, which in the 70s and 80s was a predominantly Puerto Rican and Irish community.
Yeah, would not have paired those together.
I know.
What kind of fusion food comes out of that? Like some bland ass cabbage and potatoes with something spicy delicious.
Some I gotta go check out like platanos,
like something like that.
If you live in Borum Hill, DM us. What's the food like? What is the vibe like?
Yes.
Now, mom was very supportive of Basquiat's artistic and educational ventures, even though it wasn't said if she was an artist herself, but it was said that that she was like a storyteller. And she also took him to art museums.
Oh, cool.
Especially seeing artists like Picasso, which definitely inspired Basquiat's creativity.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. They were going to museums a lot. I guess they were involved in some kind of, he was like some kind of like junior member or something.
Oh, how cute.
As like a little kid of one of the museums out there. So she was always taking him to art museums. And I think that definitely, that had to fuel some stuff in him.
Sure.
Unfortunately, there's not much more on Matilda except her struggles with mental illness.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Apparently she went in and out of mental facilities during Jean-Michel's childhood, which probably had a pretty negative effect on him.
I mean, yeah, that kind of thing's tough.
It was really, really hard. And but Daddy.
Who's dad? Dad
is Gerard Basquiat, and he was born in Haiti, and he was an accountant.
Okay. Okay. Nice and successful. Comb the hair to the side. Now he probably had a mullet. Oh, it was mullet times, right?
I don't know if dad had a mullet. He was very, like, traditional Haitian man. Mm. He was usually, like, in a suit, that kind of thing.
Got it.
Very tradish. Tradish. And, but yes, he had a boring job, but he was a huge fan of jazz at home. So he played jazz. Always playing jazz at the house, like all the time. Jazz was on in the Basquiat household.
That makes sense, too.
And you'll see what role jazz plays in his work later on, too. So Jean-Michel has a Puerto Rican mom and a Haitian-American dad. So Jean-Michel is being exposed to different cultures, different languages, different religions at a young age. On top of that, he's living in New York City. New York. Which is...
that song is so good. Sorry.
That was... I think Jay-Z actually has a bunch of Basquiat's work too, so
that would make sense. Yes.
So New York City, of course, is a melting pot of different cultures in itself, so he is absorbing all of this as a kid. Then at age 8, poor Jean-Michel got hit by a fucking car.
What? No, that's like the most New York thing / San Francisco thing that can happen. Oh no. Was he okay? I mean, obviously, like, lived longer than that.
The accident did end up rupturing his spleen, which needed to be removed surgically.
No.
Yeah. So that must have been fucking traumatic. And little kid. So watch where you're going.
Slow the fuck down.
Don't text and drive. And so while recovering, mom gave him a copy of Grey's Anatomy, which is an interesting book to give someone in the hospital. But it happened to be a really popular book at the time. Okay. I don't know. And this book would be hugely significant to him later on in his work.
Okay.
So I think mom was just like, I don't know, I had this. You seem to be into it.
Somebody
I don't know.
Gave it to me. It's like maybe,
kind of weird. I don't know. Kind of weird to give like a kid in the hospital.
You're in the hospital.
Feel very like.
The book has hospitals in it.
Like here's what your insides look like.
Like, what the fuck?
Okay, cool. I just had my spleen removed, dude. Like, I don't know. Weird. Then, unfortunately, because of the strain of Mathilde's struggles with mental illness, Jean-Michel's parents divorced. So, I guess the whole, like, sickness and unhealth thing doesn't apply to mental illness.
Into a lot of marriages. I think they leave that out of the vows now because they're like, we should probably...
just in case. And after, unfortunately, after the divorce, pretty much his whole home life just went to total shit. Like, just went to shit.
Oh, fuck. No.
Yes. And he was young. He was a little kid. And mom was deemed unfit to parent by everybody. And dad tried to raise Jean-Michel, even though he fucking sucked at it, being emotionally and physically abusive.
Oh, fuck.
Boo, dad. Ugh. Boo,
dad. Go back to the office. Go crunch some numbers.
Yeah. Fuck out of here. So dad would actually try to move the family to Puerto Rico for some job thing and then moved back to Brooklyn. So Basquiat is moving around and going to school in totally different countries. However, he was like very much excelling in school. Like he was freaking smart. And it probably had a negative impact on his overall well-being, but a positive impact on his creativity, his, you know, absorbing all of this different cultural things.
Right.
And, but then also probably turmoil and struggle and all that stuff too.
Yeah. It's a lot to put on little kids.
And
yeah.
I feel like a lot of people like really want to talk shit of like Basquiat wasn't poor and he wasn't really homeless and
right and like his struggle wasn't valid. They try to like invalidate his
exactly
own struggle.
Exactly. And yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, his parents did have some money because his dad was an accountant. So right. His parents did have some money. He went to private school, but it was still, I had a super tumultuous life anyway.
Just because you have, okay, if there's anything we learned in the Lisa Frank / Toulouse-Lautrec episodes is that money does not buy happiness.
Exactly. There's, I feel like we have a lot of artists that go from these like riches to rags to riches. Like we'd had that with Manet. We've had that with several of our artists that are kind of like, damn, it doesn't matter if you start with money. If you don't have a solid foundation, regardless of what your economical status is, you're still going to have some stuff.
Yeah, you're still going to have baggage that you carry with you.
Exactly. Eventually, when dad moved the family back to Brooklyn, Jean-Michel ended up running away from all the turmoil at home. Mm. I guess living on the streets in Washington Square Park as a 15-year-old high school dropout was better than living with dad.
Oh, fuck,
and
man.
And you would think, too, like, oh, man, my son needs help. I should really try to support him at this time. No, dad basically turned his back on his son and told him not to come back home. Like, of course.
It's like total narcissist behavior. He's like, why are you doing this to me, son?
Exactly. You
forget about the beating.
Dishonoring. Yeah, the family. Ugh. Okay, dad. Thanks, dad. Ugh. Thanks, dad.
God. Thanks, dad. Such a good dad.
Such a good dad. Of course. Until he becomes a hugely famous artist. Well, we'll get there.
Oh, you're back. Oh, hi.
You've come to my art show. I'm sorry. There's a lot of like nice shit said about dad for some reason in some of these articles and how he like protected his son's legacy and shit. But like that fucking sucks, dude. So Jean-Michel is on the streets now, like couch surfing at friends' houses. I did that at Raquel's apartment in San Francisco when I was looking for a room. I mean, don't get me wrong. My parents did not disown me, and they're extremely supportive. But it was a very crazy time.
Oh, my God.
And if you want to hear about some vodka Red Bull-fueled nights back in our art school days.
Shut.
It in early 2000. I think you know where this is going.
Oh,
hello there, you beautiful creature. Looks like you can't get enough of the Baroque Bitches Art History Gossip Podcast. Do you want more juicy tea? Join our Patreon for exclusive access to bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, exclusive voting power, digital downloads, fun merch, and more. Become one of us. One of us by going to patreon.com/baroqueb podcast or clicking the link on our website, baroquebpodcast.com, or clicking the link on our Instagram at baroque.b.podcast. Thank you for your support. We couldn't do any of this stuff without you. We love you. Thank you for bearing. Oh my God. Thank you for bearing with us. Hashtag help us quit our day jobs.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry if you hate the ads, but they're necessary. We're trying to quit our day jobs. So sorry. You can fast forward. It's fine.
Let's get back into it.
Yes.
So now, Jean-Michel is a teenager living on the streets of New York City. No family, no help, just a good friend, Al Diaz, and a can of spray paint, and this is where Samo was born.
Oh.
Well, not really. So there's going to be a lot of, like, I'm going to give you something really romantic, and then take it back.
Got it. Okay.
Well, Samo was a tag that Jean-Michel and Al invented while they were still in school together.
Aww.
Samo, referring to the weed they smoked in high school as... same old crap. So
420 blaze it.
I smoked weed in New York once. I can attest to this. I'm sorry. We're better at that.
Oh, yeah.
We're better at that, at least. You guys can have all of your wonderful things, but we are better at weed. Let's be real. Now, Diaz was already a part of the New York graffiti scene. And let me tell you, graffiti fucking blew up in the 70s and 80s in New York. New York. And this is how city kids can really say, fuck you to the man.
Hey, so, take that.
I'm walking.
Just put a nice penis on the fire hydrant. Fuck you,
fuck
man.
You. So graffiti was definitely not looked at as art before the 70s. Of course, the origins of New York graffiti, I mean, it's been around forever.
Yeah.
Egyptian times, I don't know. There's graffiti on the walls.
As long as there was like an angry kid annoyed with his teacher,
there's been graffiti. And the origins of New York graffiti scene was typically for gangs and subcultures to mark their territories and to communicate underground messages. And the rise of graffiti into the mainstream is intertwined with the rise of hip-hop into the mainstream. After the 70s, both art forms were no longer just seen as synonymous with gang activities. They were seen as a cultural movement. I mean, in the art world, not regulars. Ew, regulars.
Oh, regular.
Normies. Out of here. Anyway, the art world ate this shit up. So New York subway cars were the new canvases, especially for artists who couldn't afford canvases because they're fucking expensive.
Oh my God, it's like stupid.
It's fabric.
So why is it expensive? Like a little shitty pieces of wood. It's not even like nice wood.
What? Dumb. What? So remember our Frida and Diego episode a little while back?
Yeah.
These guys are less about just marking territory with some underground message. They're making sick-ass murals and truly channeling the revolutionary Mexican muralists of the 1930s. Mm. You got the Mexican Communist Party and all that fuck the man energy.
Yeah, big dick energy for sure.
Yeah, and the graffiti artists in New York were all about that raw revolutionary vibe. And graffiti, like hip-hop, even though both art forms had these deep-rooted cultural origins, were seen as new because graffiti looks different than traditional frescoes, just as hip-hop sounds different than jazz. Okay. Okay, so that was a very brief history of 20th century graffiti. Over. So him and Al were broke and spraying hella cool shit all over New York. Sayings like Samo for the so-called avant-garde, microwave and video existence, Big Mac certificate for Xmas. Samo is an end to the 9-to-5. I went to college, not tonight, honey. And Samo does not cause cancer in laboratory animals. I love some of his shit. Of course, it's been all covered up now. Well, so there's like no Samo shit anymore. But there's, of course, some really cool pictures of it. And he has many inspirations for this type of writing, including William S. Burroughs and Langston Hughes. And, of course, he's able to take inspiration from just being a poor black artist living in a very cruel society as well.
Right.
So William S. Burroughs, this was one of Basquiat's biggest inspirations, along with a lot of other people that I'll get into.
Right, right.
Burroughs was one of the star writers and artists of the Beat movement. And this dude was the avant-garde. So he was definitely challenging traditional society in a time where it was very much looked down on to be exploring provocative subject matter. So provocative.
Yeah, they were all just like doing acid and getting naked.
Yes. Definitely. So he was, which I'm going to get into, he was open about exploring a lot of things that would be considered a faux pas in society, including using drugs for inspiration.
Yeah.
And being a proud homosexual and going against society pretty much any way he could. And he's hella cool. Like, get into it. Not the drugs.
Yeah.
Don't be diving too hard into that unless...
A little dabble. It's okay. Don't take our advice. We don't know.
Your organs.
You do you. Your body, your choice. Like, you figure it out.
Anyway. Here's a good quote. It is not the intensity, but the duration of pain that breaks the will to resist. Oh. So he does kind of romanticize pain a lot, which I think a lot of artists really lean into. And we even talked about it in a little of our last episode about Toulouse-Lautrec. But here's a funny quote from Burroughs. So he's fucking funny, too. After one look at this planet, any visitor from outer space would say, I want to see the manager. I love it. I so got into this guy after
so reading. True.
So Burroughs really gets it. And Basquiat is also inspired by Langston Hughes, who is a huge part of the Harlem Renaissance. So right. I'm gonna do another very brief history here of the Harlem Renaissance, because it is important in Basquiat's work.
Sure.
The Harlem Renaissance was this migration in the early 1900s of thousands of black families from the South to the North. And they landed in Harlem because people were basically like overdeveloping the shit out of it. And there was just a lot of housing there for these black families that were trying to escape discrimination in the South. So this new community fostered this new cultural identity for black artists. And this was a microcosm of creativity driven by pride and struggle and identity. And a shit ton of important artists and poets and philosophers came out of the Harlem Renaissance. And it continues to inspire black artists to this day. So here's a super powerful quote from Langston Hughes. I too sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes, but I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow, I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody will dare say to me, eat in the kitchen then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I, too, am America. Like, ooh.
Ooh, you tell him. You tell him, Langston.
Dude, and these are the dudes that Basquiat idolizes.
Sure.
And you can fucking tell.
Yeah.
And yeah. So Basquiat is being a rebel living on the streets and writing hella defiant shit on the walls and doing a lot of cool art stuff. And I'll get into the art stuff soon. But of course, he meets a girl.
Oh.
Yes. A dope
vagmatized.
He's so, oh, he is vagmatized by this girl. Yes, a dope ass artist girl named Suzanne Malik. And Basquiat and her had this passionate situationship.
Oh no.
On again, off again. Ugh. And they shared a passion not only for their intense love for each other, but for art and, of course, drugs.
Oh.
Oh, no. So Suzanne basically escaped a shitty family situation in Canada. Yeah, she's fucking Canadian.
Okay. Yeah. Hi. Oh, hi there. Oh,
hi there.
Is that oh, Minnesota? Don't you know? I don't know. I'm sorry. Is that offensive? I'm sorry.
All I know is sorry.
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 I'm so sorry, Canadians. You're amazing. Yeah. She got into the New York art scene by becoming involved with the East Village Creative. So this bitch is like punk rock. Sure. And basically this group of marginalized artists that hung out in the shitty part of town that made art out of garbage, as you do.
Right.
And it was this merge of movements like punk rock and hip hop and graffiti and collaging cheap materials with ads and cartoons and signage. And they didn't stay overlooked by the art world for long. So here's a little timeline for you in American art history. What's going on right now in the art world? So remember the Pollock episode? Abstract expressionism got fucking huge in the 50s. Right. We got Pollock and de Kooning and Rothko, and they ruled the American art scene for years. After that, artists were trying to figure out where to go from there. And they were kind of getting tired of the intensity of abstract expressionism. So they moved into minimalism, which we are going to skip for right now.
Yeah.
That'll be in the future. Minimal. It's, you get it. It's not a lot of stuff.
Yeah. It's just, Agnes Martin.
Well, Agnes Martin is cool. but we'll get back to her at some point. Then after that, we got pop art in the 60s. So this is Andy fucking Warhol. He ruled the world. Foreshadowing. So go check out that episode too. This is a really good one. Then artists were trying to bridge the gap between abstract expressionism, which was still popular, and the icons of pop culture into a new art movement in the 80s, neo-expressionism. So these neo-expressionists were making these crazy collages made of trash and found objects, writing music that blended jazz beats with poetry called hip-hop, and not even realizing that this shit was going to hit the fan.
Oh no.
Dude, so after this guy got a hold of it, Andy motherfucking Warhol.
Right.
So Basquiat is walking around New York, spotted Andy eating lunch. Basquiat had the balls to come up to him and sell him a postcard that he collaged for a dollar. And this is the beginning of Basquiat's swift launch into stardom. Or so they say. So this whole romantic meeting of a homeless artist and a famous superstar is so inspiring in the 1996 movie Basquiat. However, Basquiat is starting to be known in the underground art scene before this time. So even though he was pretty broke and living with Suzanne, who was basically supporting him with her serving job, he was making a big name for himself in this movement.
King of the underworld.
Dude, seriously.
Right.
Yeah. Lord of the underworld.
Lord of the underworld.
Oh, bow down.
Bow down to my trash pile.
Seriously. So before he met Andy, he did a ton of shit. He sold upcycled clothing to costume designer Patricia Field, who sold their clothes in her cool boutique in Greenwich Village. His graffiti was published in an article in the Village Voice. He befriended artists around SVA, which is this dope-ass art school in New York. I actually toured it. It was super cool. And this is where he met their favorite alumni that they just can't shut up about, SVA, Keith Haring.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, come on. You gotta love Keith Haring.
I'm like,
right?
I want to be in his studio. I want to be in his studio when I go to school there. He also played the fucking clarinet in this dope experimental band called Gray.
Like, I knew that, actually. That's so funny.
Squidward would be so inspired. Like, he played the clarinet. It's amazing. He befriended a biology student, Alexis Adler, so he could copy the chemical compounds illustrated in Adler's textbooks, along with so much other creative ventures with his friends. I don't even have time to, like, mention them all.
Yeah, don't worry.
He wasn't just some, like, junky tagging shit. He was actively participating in anything creative that he could find. And then he pursued Andy Warhol. So,
right.
Basquiat really knows how to play the game here. He knew that Andy was his way out of poverty and a way for him to make a real impact with his art in the mainstream art world.
Sure. I mean, you can't just, like, go up to Andy Warhol and be like, I am unestablished. I have no knowledge of art. I am nothing without you. Like, that's not... You know,
yeah,
it's like, no, it you go to Andy Warhol with like some
with some clout stuff.
Already. Yeah.
And it is said that he did sell Andy a postcard, but I don't mm-hmm. think this was like, oh, this is the new star of the art world.
Right.
I must it's not have like him. A, it was like, right. Okay, cool artist. You're kind of cool. Like, here you go. Here's a
book. Yeah.
So, but it was kind of his way into like, oh, I can approach Andy Warhol. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Andy, he was like chilling in New York, dude. Like, he was in the Factory, which at this point was this nightclub for cool, sexy artists to mingle and do drugs. So Basquiat would be able to openly go into the Factory and try to meet Andy and talk to his friends and get into it.
Be a part of the scene.
Yeah.
Get his face out there.
So... they'd met and had this undeniable connection, and Andy gladly took Basquiat under his wing and gave him everything he needed to succeed. Or so they say.
Dude. That's the rumor.
It's just like the romanticism behind this guy and his friendship with Andy is so insane. And he didn't just give him a studio space and access to all these famous people in the world. Like, those are what the stories are saying. Like, these old stories that are so, like, patronizing to me.
Right.
Of, like, he's not the white savior that is taking Basquiat, this homeless man, and making him huge. Of, like, no.
And, like, if we know anything about Andy Warhol, it's, like, he's only doing it for himself. Mm. Like, whatever he does is, like, about his image. It's not about, let me help Basquiat. It's, like, oh, this kid's good, and it's going to make me bigger if I help him.
Dude, foreshadowing. No, I like it. No, this is good. But it was actually Italian gallerist Anina Nose who got wind of Basquiat from an exhibition he was in that he entered all by himself called New York New Wave exhibit at the super cool MoMA PS1 gallery.
Ooh,
so cool. And she was the one to invite him to participate in her group show, Public Access. And later on, she provided him with a studio space in the basement of her gallery. And Anina was also showing super cool revolutionary artists like Jenny Holzer and Barbara Kruger and Keith Haring. Basquiat did so well at this show that she gave him his first solo show in 1982 and moved him into a bigger studio. She was like, okay, this guy is selling work.
And so, it's big work. Like, he makes big work.
He makes huge paintings. Yes, huge paintings. And so she moved him into a bigger studio because he's successful. It's not like she's like, let me help this poor man.
Oh,
it's
my
God. Why don't you go ahead and make some paintings for me? Right. And however, they did have a falling out because of some conflicts about the transactions of his paintings. I guess he wasn't in agreement with some things that she was doing, which is super common for a lot of artist and gallerist relationships. So when you do get into a relationship with a gallerist, you need to be fucking careful and have things contracts. In place. Yeah. Yes. And if they do provide you a contract, get someone to help you read it. Because a lot of times they really, really fuck with artists.
Well, and it's like you go into this happened to me in San Francisco where it's like you put your work in, you have your price, and then they sell it for less than what you wanted. And then suddenly what you were wanting the work, because as an artist, pricing your work is kind of like an intimate experience. You value it for like that personal, what it means to you. So some works, I mean, I've priced just because they mean more to me. And then somebody will sell it for less than, and you're like, what the fuck?
And then they'll take 40-50% of it.
Yeah. And so, it's like, yeah. So yeah, protect yourself.
And at this point, like, really, if you're an artist out there, at this point, you really don't need a fucking gallery anymore.
No.
And a lot of times you're going to be more successful if you do it yourself. It's hard to do it yourself, especially if you're like an introvert, you don't know how to sell yourself, that kind of thing. We do have the fucking internet. www.
Yeah,
like we have that, so you can www. That's on the so internet funny. And but a lot of times, and I even remember this from when I was at I think this was at CCA when I was studying. There was a bunch of teachers that were actually at this gallery that were represented by this gallery that had to do this huge lawsuit with this gallery that would end up giving away paintings as gifts to patrons. And oh my that God. Is something that galleries do, of course, with permission from right. the artist.
Right.
So it's kind of like a little giveaway of, hey, you know, we still want your business. Why don't I give you one of these works? But you need to ask permission first. And a lot of times an artist will say, sure, no problem. I would like to give this collector of my work this painting so they continue to collect my work as a gift. But you can't just do that without asking.
No, no.
So
there's, yeah.
Be careful with galleries, be people. So, yeah. So she was a little shady. And he got into business with art dealer Bruno Bischofberger. And guess who?
What a name.
Bischofberger. And guess who Bruno worked for? Andy.
Warhol.
Bruno arranged a lunch so Warhol and Basquiat could meet. Andy was famous for always carrying around a Polaroid camera. He took a picture of the two of them called Dos Cabezas. And the rest is history.
Aww.
So there's a lot of conflicting arguments about their friendship. Some say that they were using each other, Basquiat for fame, and Andy to have this cool young artist as a symbol of relevancy, which might be true on the surface. But I do believe that they had this mutual understanding and respect for each other.
Yeah. And
I think they understood this art game thing, but artistically, they had this deep admiration for each other's work and what they were doing.
Yeah, I think two things can be true, right? Like, it's like, it could be a symbiotic, you know, relationship of helping each other, but it also can be like, oh, we have like a very deep love and respect for one another as well.
Also, like super creative and just bounce off each other. It was kind of magnetic energy for them, for a very like odd looking duo of this like older queer white man that's a little awkward socially and this very young, very cool kind of black like man, hot, artist, hottie.
Sexy.
Yeah, like, I'm a cool artist in this new underground scene. He's the king of pop art with, like, the king of neo-expressionism. And Keith Haring, who obviously is going to get an episode, like, any day now, stated that they exercised together, they ate together, and they laughed together. Keith Haring is so fucking cute, dude. And he's going to show up a couple times. However, Warhol's assistant, Ronnie Catrone, stated, it was like some crazy art world marriage, and they were the odd couple. Jean-Michel thought he needed Andy's fame, and Andy thought he needed Jean-Michel's new blood. And Jean-Michel gave Andy a rebellious image again. So, yeah, and this is the 80s. This isn't the 60s. Like, Warhol's not the rebel anymore. Like,
Yeah. Like, he's, so, like, on the outs. Like, he's, like,
the soup fainting. Cans, okay, we like that. But, like, do something with
he's
it.
He's, like, a New York staple, but it's, like, you're kind of fading.
Yeah. Right? And he's doing, like, other things. Doing things like piss paintings and, like, all this stuff. So he's really trying to, like, be rebellious again.
Yeah.
So Basquiat is painting in this dope new studio in Andy's building that Basquiat rented. Like, I just keep going. Like, he gave him this. Like, no, he rented the studio space. And he's making some money at this point, too. And he didn't just give it to him. And all these gallerists are just kissing Basquiat's ass. And this time, he's really doing the fucking thing. Because he's with Andy. And they just, this kid is so cool. Oh, my God. So now Basquiat was known in the art scene, but I gotta give it to Andy. He really did launch Basquiat into the mainstream art world.
Oh, sure.
And with this intense shift into success, he made some of his most influential works. And this was an intense shift into success, like launched into the universe. So you can check out Crown Hotel, Mona Lisa, Black Background. And this is an obvious nod to Manet's Olympia. And we know this because
he it says fucking Olympia right on there.
Right on the thing. It says
fucking cats.
Says it right on the thing. And there's other things too, like 17% Mona Lisa for fools, Basquiat referring to Da Vinci's Mona Lisa, and Manet's Olympia. So if you remember our Manet episode and all the drama around Olympia, if you don't, go back, because it's so much tea.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Manet's most scandalized portrait. Well, Basquiat made several other paintings surrounding Olympia. Some called Three Quarters of Olympia Minus the Servant and Untitled Detail of Maid from Olympia. So he's obviously talking about the black maid in Olympia and how she just fades into the background because Manet made her skin so dark that she blends into the black background.
Right.
Well, in Basquiat's painting, she is the background. Mm. And Olympia is just a white outline, making the maid the whole ass painting. And sometimes he just paints the maid herself. And so he's obviously saying something here. And we also can see his signature three-pointed crown that shows up in a lot of his paintings. And it also shows up on every fuckboy in LA's hoodie. I think the brand, like, Supreme has something to do with it. Like,
yeah, so I think you're probably right.
The crown is on everything. And there's a lot of theories surrounding the crown. So, and it shows up in, like, so many, like 90% of his paintings.
Like,
And the simple theory being that the crown is an easy symbol to understand. He is crowning himself as the king of this new art movement. He also often references royalty in his paintings. So this guy's historical references, guys. Check out Charles I, where the crown shows up in the text, most young kings get their head cut off. So this might be a little foreshadowing. And in this one.
Damn.
And this was a little nod to his launch into success of, oh shit. Oh no.
So good.
Is this good or bad?
Yeah.
So
like, he knows that this is dangerous.
Because he knows history. He's seen this before.
Yeah.
Like, he's very well read. He knows history. And he's just like, is this a good thing?
That this is happening to me.
Yeah, I'm gonna play
with this. Well, and maybe there's like a little bit of like not trusting himself with it, right?
100%. And I think a lot of people think of the crown as he's not totally sure of himself, so it's a little bit of like I'm gonna try to act super arrogant that I am the guy because Pablo did it. He does have a couple paintings of Pablo. And however, there's other theories surrounding the crown. So he's also crowning famous black Americans in order to heighten their status in society. So you can check out several of these paintings. You can check out Untitled Sugar Ray Robinson. So this piece is a very simple portrait of a face on a blank background with a crown on top of the face. And a lot of these are somewhat similar. And Sugar Ray Robinson was one of the greatest boxers of all time. And he does this same kind of motif for several famous black boxers like Jack Johnson and Jersey Joe Walcott. And there's another theory that the three pointed crown is actually an upside down W as a nod to his friend and mentor, Andy Warhol, the guy that gave
I don't think so.
A shot at fame. I don't think so either. A lot of people want to say that. But yeah, I don't really buy that either. I think he's.
I don't think so.
I think he's doing other things with the crown.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really mention it. And Basquiat and Warhol's friendship would just grow stronger and stronger, and they collaborated on many paintings together. Andy stating that Jean-Michel got me into painting differently. So you can check out another. I really like this one. You can check out their collaboration. It's called Arm and Hammer 2. And I really like this one. It just looks cool. And it's all about, you can see both styles merging together perfectly.
Totally.
Basquiat talks about collaborating with Andy, stating, Andy would start one and put something very recognizable on it or a product logo, and I would sort of deface it. Then I would try to get him to work some more on it, and I would try to get him to do at least two things. And so he's kind of challenging Warhol a little bit here.
Like, do you, like, get outside your comfort zone?
Exactly. Do we need another print to Elvis? Do we really?
And it doesn't need to be a perfect reproduction. You can fuck with it.
You can paint it. And Andy really wasn't painting that much at this point.
Yeah.
And he kind of got him back into working with his hands, painting the thing. He was also like, pissing even on when stuff he, too.
Even when he was painting, it was like sometimes he just hired out, like hires minions to do the painting.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like this in any way, shape, or form.
It was an expressionist. It was more of like after, a pop-up situation.
Yeah.
Or like using a pattern or using a stencil or something like that if he was going to paint. So Basquiat kind of forced him to do different things.
I love it.
Yeah, work outside the box. And I think he needed that. And
I think so too.
Yeah. And Basquiat wasn't afraid to raise the same progressive themes that he used in his solo works in these collabs, like racial inequity, oppression, colonization, and police brutality. So he wasn't afraid to be like, I'm sorry, white guy. I'm going to put like police brutality right over your like Tesco sign. Like, and you're going to have to deal with it. So I like the cojones. And and Keith Haring, he's just the sweetest guy. He just says the most like greatest things. And Keith Haring describes the collabs really well, stating, the collaborations were a physical conversation happening in paint instead of words. The sense of humor, the snide remarks, the profound realizations, the simple chit-chat all happened with paint and brushes. Each of them inspired the other to outdo the rest. So he just puts it so, like, lovely. Aww. He's so lovely. And not only was Basquiat painting with Warhol, he was also doing a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
Drugs, including cocaine. Ah! And not only with Warhol, but with everyone else, including.
It was the 80s.
It was the 80s, guys. It has fentanyl in it now, so you can't do it. You can't have fentanyl anymore.
Don't do it anymore.
I can't do it anymore. So he was doing cocaine with a very, I had to throw this little love interest in there that was very unknown at the time, but definitely a lot more famous than Andy Warhol now. Fucking Madonna.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Cher, and Madonna definitely makes sense too.
Madonna.
So, yes. She's like queen of the underlord now.
She is totally queen of the underlord. Look. So Basquiat met the then emerging singer Madonna at a nightclub. They hit it off right away. And he even stated to art dealer Larry Gagosian, her name is Madonna, and she's going to be huge. He fucking knew that she had a little something going on. And they had a very short, tumultuous love affair, and she basically had to break it off because he wasn't just doing cocaine at this time, which was pretty trendy in the 80s. It wouldn't seem dangerous, but he was doing heroin. Which we all know, then and now, is a major no-no. And a one-way ticket to death. So, after many failed attempts at love with many different ladies, of course, you've seen his pictures. He's very cute. So nice. The ladies liked him. Basquiat always seemed to go back to his seemingly true love and muse, Suzanne. So you can check out a double portrait of them called Self-Portrait with Suzanne. And you can really feel their relationship was like in this painting. And in this painting, some can argue that they're fighting, but I don't think so. I think they're talking about ideas. They have speech bubbles with gibberish in them, and they also have these blobs over their heads. I can interpret this as like a description of how their relationship was filled with passionate discussions about creative ideas. So a lot of people look at this work, and then they put it alongside like de Kooning's Woman series. Right. De Kooning definitely needs episode at some point
totally.
Too. But de Kooning was an abstract expressionism that was kind of famous alongside Pollock. And he's mentioned a little bit in the Pollock episode too, because they were rivals. And de Kooning had really weird relationships with women and didn't like them, it seemed like, and made these really, really powerful but very, very, like, angry paintings of women. So you can see, like, oh, he's not happy with ladies at this point. But Basquiat, like, even though it seems that expressionistic style, it just doesn't seem like it has the same, like, anger behind it.
I don't think it's angry. I just think it's in his hand. It just feels
it's like... in his hand, totally. And I think it was, like... less angry and more passionate. Yeah, he's like reaching for her waist, and there's something going on that they're kind of equal in a way,
right?
And I think that they were just so in love, and they were also heavily fucking high. Okay, so here's some tea. During a night out at the Roxy, Suzanne spotted Madonna and Basquiat together, and Suzanne fucking attacked her.
Oh my God, like physically?
Yes. And Basquiat, being petty as fuck, immortalized this moment in a painting called A Panel of Experts.
Oh my God, no, he did not. That's so fucked.
So check out A Panel of Experts. Which he draws Venus, and this is always a reference to Suzanne, or it's thought of to be always a reference to Suzanne, because she was his one muse, and right. And then of course he references Madonna because it's literally wrote her name and crossed it off. So he told Suzanne that she won the fight, which is why he crossed out Madonna's name and and then you can see Venus by it. And
because she's his Venus.
Mm-hmm.
So Venus wins. Oh, fuck.
And stated that she beat her up just like a Puerto Rican girl.
He's proud of that for sure. Yeah,
he liked that. Well, Madonna, also being petty as fuck, went to the gallery where the painting was being displayed in 1982 and took a picture in front of it.
that is petty and funny as fuck.
Yes, I had to throw that one in there. So Basquiat was clearly having fun and getting into all kinds of drama with the ladies, all the while he's collaborating with Andy Warhol and Italian artist Francesco Clemente, which Bruno, their dealer, kind of forced Francesco in this. Basquiat and Andy were good at collaborating, but Francesco Clemente was like kind of the third wheel, which makes me sad because they did make some really cool paintings. So you can check out one of my favorites of this like weird forced collaboration, Origin of Cotton, where you can notably see all three artistic styles together. So Clemente was kind of this like stylized surrealist expressionist he had some super funky stuff. His work is really cool.
Okay, it's cool,
but this was like totally forced, and And they just left Clemente out at some point, and Basquiat and Warhol would collaborate kind of like behind his back. So I don't know. I feel kind of bad.
They're like,
for
him. Yeah, that's like grade school recess vibes. Totally.
Like, yeah. Of you guys being, are hanging out. Oh, you guys are. Oh.
Oh, okay. I come play with you? Oh, I can't play with you. Like. You went but we're to... at the same fucking school, and there's literally no one else to play with. There's... Like, can I please just fucking sit with you, please? Like, that's so fucked.
You guys did a sleepover last weekend? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, okay. Like, what it's the like, fuck? I feel so Man, bad because the paintings sucks. Are cool, but it's just Warhol and Basquiat just had a better.
They just had a thing.
They had a thing. They were besties. They had a fucking thing. Right. And Andy and Basquiat's collaborations really took off, and they held an exhibition at the Tony Shafrosi Gallery in 1985 called Andy Warhol and Jean-Michel Basquiat, which came with mixed reviews. And I didn't know it. Yeah, they thought they really had something, and they're like, I don't like it. And and then, which the paintings are really cool, but they just... We'll
they weren't ready.
Why.
They don't get it.
They don't get it. In a New York Times article, journalist Vivian Rayner states, the collaboration looks like one of Warhol's manipulations, which increasingly seem based on the Mencken theory about nobody going broke, underestimating the public's intelligence. Basquiat, meanwhile, comes across as the all-too-willing accessory. And
she didn't.
And FYI, Mencken was a cultural critic known for his satirical commentary on American society, and he was racist as fuck. So
okay, well, fuck that guy. I thought it was a lady.
And now Warhol. Well, the journalist was a lady, but
got it. Mencken theory.
And now Warhol wasn't really affected by these bad reviews. He's like used to it. He's like, don't listen to
them.
He
like had so many shows where people were thrown shade. Okay, like, whatever. I'll just sit here in my fucking mansion.
Sorry, I don't get it.
The Upper East Side.
But Basquiat was, and he was really hurt by this and started becoming very paranoid. I wonder why. About Warhol potentially using him. So Basquiat stating, I wanted to be a star, not a gallery mascot. So unfortunately, their relationship never recovered from this. And Andy Warhol died of a sudden heart attack after a gallbladder surgery on February 27th. 1987. And these bad reviews and Andy's death affected Basquiat so much that he really dived heavily back into heroin after like a short stint of sobriety. So he'd have these little short stints and be painting a lot and being really productive. And then boom, like right back into it. So it's a hell of a drug, you guys. You can't just play around with that shit. And a year later, on August 12th, 1988, Jean-Michel Basquiat died of a heroin overdose at the very young age of 27.
That's right. He's in the 27 Club.
Yeah. Basquiat was buried at Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn, New York. So this is a weird scene. His father only invited a handful of his close friends, but the cemetery was flooded with schemy art dealers eagerly awaiting news of his estate. Yeah, it was a weird fucking scene. And of course his mom was there, and she was still very much dealing with
fucked
her mental
up because
illness.
Her son just died. Yeah.
Yeah. But well, she was very much still like in and out of facilities. And these fucking art dealers knew this. And would like come up to her and like try to make deals with her and stuff. And so much so that her estranged ex-husband, Basquiat's dad, was like, listen, don't talk to anybody about anything. Okay? Because it's millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of paintings.
Right.
And Keith, and this is sad, but I had to add it in there because it was so nice. But Keith Haring, God. who at this point was very much noticeably suffering from AIDS, spoke at Basquiat's funeral and stated he disrupted the politics of the art world and insisted that if he had to play their games, he would make the rules. His images entered the dreams and museums of the exploiters, and the world can never be the same. Oh, Harry.
Oh, my God. I'm, like, going to cry.
I know. I was, like, crying at the cafe a little bit when I was reading this. Oh, my God. I'm like, okay, Harry. Yeah, and apparently, he wasn't doing so hot at this point. And Basquiat's paintings are enjoyed by fucking everyone. And he actually recently broke a record of the highest price ever paid at an auction for an artwork by an American artist at a whopping $110.5 million fucking dollars.
So fucking wild.
So that's Basquiat.
Wow.
Ooh, yes.
Good one. Man.
Yeah. Impactful life, but short life, unfortunately. So, guy at the party.
Who is he?
Who can relate to Basquiat?
I know who's trying to steal his hairstyle, but who is he?
Yeah. So this one's fun. Jim Carrey.
Oh.
So I'm a huge fucking fan of this guy, and I think there's some similarities here. So not only artistically, but in his personal life as well. So he often portrays characters who appear foolish, primitive even, but these characters possess a deeper intelligence that they soon use to uncover truth or challenge societal norms. And in his real life, dude, he's so cool. Like, he is known to be a very complex individual. He has a deep interest in spirituality and self-discovery and philosophical ideas, and has been very open with his struggles with depression.
Yeah.
And he can blend humor, wit, with creativity, and just like Basquiat. So, and his artwork is really cool, too. Just check out his website. His work is dope.
Jim Carrey has art?
Yeah, he's a painter.
I did not know that.
He's had a couple of shows, and his work is really cool and weird and big and
Basquiat-ish. I just saw there was, like, on probably Instagram, that video of him, like, eating a watermelon at a stand when he's, like, maybe 24, and he just picks up a watermelon from, like, a fruit kiosk and just, like, like, eats the whole thing and then puts it back, and then, like, he's just eating random fruits from this poor fruit stand, probably in New York.
Dude, he's so
but
cool.
Yeah, I mean, Dumb and Dumber, great movie.
Oh my god. Genius.
And then there's a really great documentary about like The Man on the Moon. Have you seen that? One, it's like about him doing, what do they call that, where they like method acting.
Oh yeah, he gets into the character and stays in character. Yeah.
Oh
crazy
my god,
artist. So
crazy,
like,
artist.
Super super cool, and can kind of like blend into different modes of himself. He can play the Hollywood game while also kind of like break into it and explore
and knowing
truth.
It's bullshit.
And call people the fuck out at shit. So like, and but it's like, I can't get mad at you, Jim Carrey. You're adorable. So I thought that there might have been
good
some similarities there.
Good one.
Yeah, that was I'm sorry about the intensity, but you guys gotta know. You guys gotta know about Basquiat.
It was so good. It was so good.
And fun Madonna's drama too. I like that
Madonna
part.
Drama. Madonna, I'm here for drama. It.
Yeah, apparently Madonna, like, drama. He made a bunch of paintings for her, and a little side drama. He made a bunch of paintings for her, and then when she like pissed him off, he like painted over all the paintings.
Oh, that is
so
a petty bitch.
Yeah.
I love it.
So
oh my god.
Fun. So bummer, Madonna. That sucks. But
dude, so
but
good. Fun. I loved it. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah, I was definitely crying towards the end. I was crying in the coffee shop I was working at. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna like not make this a thing. Keep hearing the fuck up. Stop being so profound.
I love Keith Haring. We'll definitely have to do him one of these.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he deserves one. That he deserves an intense one. So,
well, we are on Patreon.
You know this. We're on Patreon.
Yeah, we're doing free giveaways for the first 100 paid patrons.
Yeah, we got cool stuff.
We got cool stuff and bonus episodes. Check out our Instagram, baroque.b.podcast.
What else? We have a newsletter.
Check out our, we have a newsletter. If you want to know who the artists are for the upcoming month, we'll send that out
stickers.
To you. Stickers. We have stickers.
Everything.
Check out our website, baroquebpodcast.com. And
if anything, just keep listening.
Just keep listening.
Well. We love you. Bye. Thank you.